France offered 100 jets to Ukraine, Emmanuel Macron announced what their objectives are.
Monsieur le Président, cher Volodymyr, je veux ici vous redire, à travers vous aussi au peuple ukrainien, que la France reste à vos côtés. Ensemble, avec nos partenaires, nous continuerons d'agir en faveur de la paix, d'une paix juste, durable, conforme au droit international, assurant la sécurité d'une Ukraine souveraine, indépendante, libre et européenne.
Oh, yeah, that's so heartfelt, and a freedom and peace and a just and sustainable peace. And we're right with you the whole time. But yeah, you're going to be right with them the whole time to loss. And then on the day that the Russian forces now pause a collapse somewhere and people are just in panic and start, you know, free fall running, which is inevitable at some point. It's just a mathematical certainty. It's got to happen at some point. You just can't keep going on like this forever. The Ukraine side, who were having all the negatives I just mentioned, it's going to happen at some point. And then what will France do? It won't be a French territory being overrun. It won't be French soldiers being killed. It won't be French civilians dying. France will go, huh. Anyway, I got to go back to Paris. And that'll be it. And they'll just shrug their shoulders and they'll blame Russia and they'll blame whoever else, who knows what. There are always going to be somebody else at fault here. But then they'll say, you know what, we need to double down on our defense. And I can only imagine that the French military, that the French government will say, oh my God, see, the big warning is just watch for this to happen. Oh my God, here they're going to all come to us next. And now we have to spend a lot more money on defense because we'll be the next, even though there is no evidence that Russia wants to do that, has any interest in doing that, or capacity to do that. As many of our guests have shown here in recent months, especially those who have some knowledge about Russia, they are self-sufficient. They don't need to come in to conquer anything. This is not like a Hitler moment to where he had written Mein Kampf and they knew that Russia had, or Germany had, territorial acquisitions outside of their aspirations, outside of their country, that they had talked about it, they had a military infrastructure capable of doing it, and that there were no nuclear weapons in existence at the time, so nothing that could potentially stop that. That's not the case today. Russia doesn't have the capacity to wage a war of conquest conventionally into Western Europe, nor do they have any interest in doing so because it would be absurd to the highest degree because they can't gain anything by it. They already have what they need. Why would they want to take over a bunch of countries that right now, even in their current state, are economic deadweights and would be a drain on the society, much less the fact that you would have to garrison all these places for years into the future, millions of people, and you would have all kinds of fighting going on at the insurgent level, et cetera. There's no doubt that would happen. Why would Russia ever do that? They don't have any interest in doing that and would lose a lot. But what they do want is to weaken the West and make them see, don't come towards us. We're going to secure our Western border. And now they would stop because they have a performing economy, et cetera. And they don't have their troops that would be dying anymore after that war had been concluded. So there's never a rational, logical reason they would do that. They've never said anything to the contrary, as Hitler did. So, but that's not going to matter because the facts haven't mattered for the last nearly 4 years. Why would they start to matter now for the West? But if we've gone on these basically suicidal and self-defeating policies up to this point, I don't know why they would stop. Although the hope is that when enough of this reality, that enough people, and Julian Rurka is one example of them, who's finally said, look, I've been trying to be as optimistic as I can, but if I'm going to have a conscience, I can't keep doing it. I bet he won't be the only one. The hope is that enough of those people in these various countries will rise up and say, quit making it more likely we get into a war with Russia we don't need to fight, etc. We'll see how that's going to work out. Macron's not the only one. And at the head of this list is Brother Volodymyr Zelensky.
Такі сильні коаліції, які колись були українські, які ніколи не були до цього моменту. Українці дали цей об'єднавчий імпульс. Саме такий імпульс в Європі, іншим в світі, ми отримуємо допомогу завдяки цьому. Єдність працює, саме тому ми можемо збивати російські ракети, ми можемо зупиняти російські штурми щоденно на фронті. Ми відновлюємо нашу енергетику, нам дуже важко, дуже складно, але ми все це відновлюємо, нашу інфраструктуру, коли Росія її руйнує. І найголовніше, ми даємо також іншим націям надію, що Росія їй не вдасться зробити новою нормою війни.
Wow, that's a new high or a new low, depending on how you want to look at it, even for Volodymyr Zelensky. So he's sitting there saying that Ukraine is forming a unifying moment for all of Europe. It's drawing all these nations together in a way that they hadn't before. And that's a good thing. And by the way, when Russia's trying to hit us with rockets, we're shooting rockets down. When they're advancing on the front lines, we're pushing them back. And when they're trying to destroy our infrastructure, we're rebuilding it back up. And bottom line is, we are going forward, and we are going to ultimately make sure that Russia can't succeed at to having any success with this war. Not a word he said is true. Now, a thing in there about you don't have enough men to even maintain your army. You are shrinking every single month. You're losing hundreds of square kilometers, possibly in the thousands by the end of this month here, each month. And your energy infrastructure is being ground to dust. And even Secretary of State Marco Rubio admitted last week that over the last several years, you're continuing to lose percentages that can't be replaced. And so the next winter, it starts at a lower case and then goes further and further down. And even he said, and what's the point of giving you defensive weapons when a week after we give these new systems in there, they're destroyed? I don't know if that was a slip of the tongue or maybe an intentional comment that we're not doing any of that. So this idea that we're unified, you have the United States has stopped giving anything to Ukraine. They said we're going to sell stuff, and that's been kind of on the back burner for a while. You haven't heard about any new things there. And what you did hear just last week was Secretary Rubio saying, I don't even see what the point is of giving you this kind of stuff. I guess we'll sell some other stuff and make some money. And that's the United States. But then you have Slovakia and Hungary are not quite as unified as France.
European politics intellectually is very sophisticated, but what they are saying basically means that they would not like to have a peace just now. They would like to continue the war. They think, and they speak about it publicly, that we have to continue the war to support Ukraine more. The situation will improve on the front line, and we will have a better circumstances or preconditions for negotiation. Wrong, totally wrong. Not to speak about geopolitics and human dimension, economically and financially is just crazy. We finance a country which has no chance to win the war, but at the same time, there's a high level of corruption.
Yeah. I mean, Viktor Orban has never shied away from saying the truth. And I know a lot of people in Europe are not fans of Viktor Orban. They don't like him. But at least on this foreign policy issue, he has been right from the beginning. And he is not exaggerated. He has been very clear on the very fundamental reasons why he said that. You remember, I think it was a week or so ago, he was in Washington, and he was saying something nearly as categorical that the Ukraine side can't win. And standing right next to Trump, you may remember that one awkward question. They say, wait, are you saying that Ukraine can't win? Can Ukraine not win this war at all? And he hesitated. He kind of looked over at Trump, and he said, well, I guess a miracle is always possible. Because, I he didn't want to upstage Trump, I guess. Who knows what was said behind the scenes, but you see here in this interview, he had no such hesitation. He said, you can't win this war. Why should we give economics? Why should we give weapons? Why should we give support? And then he just added that last part there about this corruption. And I don't have any of the sound bites right in front of me, but you may be well aware that there is a major corruption scandal exploded. People in Ukraine are actually turning against Zelensky. One report I saw just this morning said that his approval rating is down to 20%, which is a dramatic drop from just recent times because there's been a revelation that one of his closest confidants has been directly engaged in an $100 million scandal. And as Larry Johnson said on our show here recently, that's almost small potatoes compared to the, I think it was $48 billion other scandal that's being in research right now. This is from just a couple of months ago when Zelensky, apparently aware that he was being investigated, tried to disband. It's called the NABU, their anti-corruption organizations. He tried to disband them, and there was such an uproar that he had to reinitiate them, but put some handcuffs on them, basically. But even that didn't work, and God only knows how much is really at stake here, how much has really gone out. And the bottom line, though, is everything you want to look at, you see that Volodymyr Zelensky is interested in getting more money and more support, and he never stops doing that, even though, as Viktor Orban correctly states, this war militarily cannot be won, and this war, and I'll go a little bit further and say that the Ukraine side cannot avoid defeat. That is pretty close to what Julian Rybka has now said. Ukraine will lose this war, and it's picking up speed, and it could come sooner. Let me show you graphically probably what led Julian Rybka to this conclusion. This is the map here. I want to go over several key areas just since the last time I gave you an update toward the end of last week. And we're going to start down in Zaporizhia area. So here's Zaporizhia City. There has been continued advancement up in the in this area here, up along these waterways, where I think the last time we showed you, this was in the red zone. There's some gray zone. Now then, this has gone all the way up into Primorsk, is now in the gray zone where the Russian forces continued advancing there. And again, because there's not any of these fire brigades, it's unclear that the Ukraine has enough troops to prevent Russia from getting. You see, it's not far at all into the outskirts of the city of Zaporizhia. So the Russians continue pushing up here in the south. Then we continue to move over toward the further up the western the eastern front. And you see around the city of Orkhiv here, the settlement of Malotakhmatchka has now been taken by the Russians. And now then they're nearly on the outskirts of Orkhiv itself. This is another place where the Ukrainian side has been dug in. And once this is taken here, then like so many of these other places, the Russians can start moving up in a pincer movement to cut off the supply route here. They're already on the exertion. They definitely have visibility and fire control over these roads here in the south. So it won't be much before they can get this. And then all of these folks here that are defending along this, where the front line is, will also be surrounded, and something we see happening a lot lately. Let's move up a little bit more here to Gulyapolia. There has been additional advances here. I think the last time I showed you, this was in the gray zone. This has now turned into Russian territory outright, and the gray zone has expanded as Russia is moving ever closer to having this route into Gulyapolia. And the exact same issue here. You see that Russia are on the flanks already of the north and south, have it close to a semi-cauldron already. It won't take much more until they can get this into a cauldron. And yet again, all the troops that are basically trapped in here are going to be faced with either surrender, death, or withdrawal. And that's another common theme we're going to see repeated again. So now then, let's go up to the big issues here. You see more up the Andriivka area. This is again in the last 12 hours, additional Russian control up to this, heading up to this city hill called Pokrovsk. By the way, this is different than the Pokrovsk we've been talking about, but it's yet another town where Russia's moving closer up into. Let's go ahead and move up into the big area we talk about all the time, which is Pokrovsk. So in the northeastern part of Pokrovsk, you see there's yet another area where the Ukraine side has been forced out of. Russia now is in full control over that. And there's hardly any area, just a few streets. And these are like little dachas, little outhouses, a farming community type situation here on the outskirts. There's almost nothing left. By the numbers, I think it's 93%. It's all but effectively been lost by the Ukraine side. And now then Mirnograd. And you see there's been significant escalation in the gray zone of the Mirnograd in this area. It's even worse when you go south. Remember this whole field I kept talking about. Now the entire field is in the gray zone. It appears that the Ukraine side may be trying to withdraw their forces here to get them up into the more defensible areas here, or else Russia is just moving a lot faster. This could well be turning red. Even by tomorrow morning, we'll see how that's going to work out here. The Ukraine side, remember, I told you they had been conducting a tactical counterattack against Rodinska to try and take that back and to free the area to get their troops unbroken out of Mirnograd. But you see that has now failed as well. Now then, this is turning more again back into red. There's still some gray zone up in here, but this area, which had been in the gray zone, has now been retaken by the Russian side. Even more than that, when we get up into the Shakhova pocket right here, this was one of the other areas where the Ukraine side did, for a period of time, push the Russians back. Now that's back into the gray zone. But this Shakhova pocket now is almost completely cut off. Volodymyrovka, that has now been turned from the gray zone into Russian control. And this is almost completely cut off. And so once that's cut off now, again, that'll be yet another of the most recent failures by the Ukraine side. Then up into Konstantinivka, which is the other issue that's just right on the other side of the Pokrovsk-Mirnograd conglomeration. The Russians continue to move south in that, and they're moving up more into the city itself. They have a foothold already. They're moving up further into the south, and that is another area that the Ukraine side just doesn't have any reinforcements. And then up into the other area we talk about a lot is the Kupiansk area. That apparently has not had any major changes. That's all still in the gray zone. That's where it was last time I showed you. So no real move there. Lots of local clashes, but no exchange of territory. However, where there has been significant additions is up here in the Kharkiv area. So this was almost all in the gray zone. Just a little bit of red was up into this area here. Now then it's all turned into red. New territorial acquisitions here and new gray zones have been pushed out further. What it looks like that Russia is doing, and by the way, there's been some additional advances into Vovchansk. They have pushed south of the city now that for the longest time it was up around this area. It's now moved down south to here. There's a little bit more of the gray zone down in this area, and it looks like that Russia may be preparing to conduct another pincer movement here once they consolidate these areas here. And I would imagine once they complete Vovchansk, and you see they haven't yet, there's still a lot of this area that's still under Ukrainian control. But once they get these territories, then it's entirely possible, if not probable, that Russia will push out at some point around here and at some point around Vovchansk and to try and meet up here with some kind of pincer movements and potentially cut off this entire northern part of the territory of Kharkiv, which will then further isolate the city of Kharkiv. And they have been under relentless attacks against their energy infrastructure, against their military installations, command and control, ammunition depots, etc. It's just been hit really, really hard. And you just see when you look back again at the bottom line, we're talking from the north all the way down to Zaporizhia in the south. There's even still some skirmishes going on around Kherson. That has continued on, although that hasn't gone as far in the last week or so. Hasn't been much at all changed on there, but there are still clashes. You just don't have enough troops to hold all of this stuff. And so the reason why Rybka is sounding the alarm is because some of these areas in the Dnipro Oblast, which is right here, the Russians are in that. You have the Kharkiv area in the north. You still have a toehold in some of the Sumy areas. That still belongs to Russia. They didn't go any further with that, but they still have it. And then all along the front line here, Russia continues to have, according to Zelensky, somewhere around 150,000 additional troops in this area just outside of Pokrovsk, which could be used to reinforce any place that they start to get success here. So the bottom line is that in every way you want to look at this militarily, whether you're talking about politically, economically, strategically at their strategic military, operationally military, and at the tactical level of military, and most crucially at the manpower level. Russia has an advantage in the drones. They have an advantage in the defense industrial base. They have the big-time advantage economically, because all of these sanctions we keep done basically makes them sanction-proof and have forced them to find other outlets elsewhere which are not capable of being sanctioned. So that's easing the difficulty on Russia economically. So everywhere you want to look, and of course the kingpin on the Russian side also is the manpower. They continue to grow their forces, somewhere around 1.5 million active forces now, over 700,000 but reportedly within the Ukraine side borders, and another 800 or so thousand in Russia training, continuing to rotate troops around. Stanislav, I think, told you about that. They can get in contact for a while, then they can get out, recovery, refit, reform, etc. The Ukraine side can't do any of that because they now effectively have no strategic reserve. So if Russia does achieve a breakthrough somewhere, that's going to be it, folks. It's going to be so the end could come quickly. We have been inching forward for a long time, but as I said, at some point, mathematics applies. Spin fails to work, and when you have a clash between spin and reality, reality eventually will impose itself and will trump the spin. And we're starting to see that play out now. We can see an acceleration as we get into the rest of this winter, into the next year. We'll certainly keep following all that for you. At the last of this today, before we let you go, I do want to quickly bring you up to date on what's been happening in the potential for a conflict in Venezuela. So we have had some information occur over that over the weekend. I want to bring you up to Trump was asked just a couple of days ago, or I guess maybe it was yesterday. He was asked kind of where are we on things in Venezuela? Here's what he said.
You said Venezuela wants to talk. What does that mean?
Venezuela would like to talk. What does it mean? You tell me. I don't know.
You want to talk to them?
I talk to anybody. I talk to you, right? I talk to anybody. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that, folks, that's not lending itself to a lot of confidence. You may recall a week or two ago, Trump was asked in the Oval Office. They said, hey, sir, turns out that Maduro is begging you. He's been giving you an English language statement. He's basically offering on a silver platter his oil, his gold, his other minerals, etc. And you saw Trump just dismissed it and said, yeah, he didn't want to F around with us. You remember him saying, right? It was after that, then there's been multiple meetings inside the White House about this situation here. The USS Gerald R. Ford, the biggest aircraft carrier in our arsenal, is there. There's lots of other destroyers, missile carriers, marine amphibious units, etc. All this stuff down there. News out that Trump has authorized the potential for CIA to conduct operations inside of Venezuela. More events, meetings took place toward the end of last week, and I think even one on Saturday. And yet, now then, he says, okay, I'm willing to talk. But Maduro's been trying to talk. Why are we talking now and when we didn't before? And then that was a really strange statement that he said. Well, what are you going to talk about? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that the question was because, well, I mean, Maduro's already offered you the stuff and you basically blew it off. So what are you going to talk about? And he's like, I don't know. You tell me. What do you mean? You tell me. You're the president. The only thing that matters is what you say. It doesn't matter what anybody else speculates, not even us. As much as I have a high opinion of the show that we provide and the information we put out there and the observation and analysis, but at the end of the day, it's nothing but an analysis. I don't have any decision-making power. Only the president does. So everyone wants to know, what are you going to talk about? And when he just says, I don't know, I worry that he might mean that he might mean, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to talk about here. And that's a little bit more of a significant issue than it may appear. And we're actually going to we have a show later this week, and I'll give you more details of that as we get closer. I think it's going to be on Thursday with a doctor, a PhD and psychologist who says, there may be more to just, you know, not just a pejorative or insult that the president is having some cognitive decline, but there are some genuine possibilities that he may actually have some cognitive decline. And this could be one of the evidences of it, because this just doesn't make any sense at all. And the State Department spokesman also had an odd comment over the weekend where someone asked them what the situation with Venezuela was. And here's what they had to say.
No one wants a war with Venezuela. To the extent they're claiming it has something to do with the drug trade coming to the United States, the majority of drugs don't come through the Caribbean. They come via a land route that the president is ignoring because he is so focused on this absurd, illegal military campaign against Venezuela.
Absurd? What's absurd is the claim that he is ignoring the border. We have gone from the worst border crisis in U.S. history under the previous administration to the most secure border in U.S. history under this one. And that directly impacts the ability of these narco-terrorists to smuggle drugs into our country. Not to mention all of the trips the secretary has taken across our region, talking with our partners and allies about ways we can combat these narco-terrorists, working together. And also, the agreements I mentioned regarding the precursors of fentanyl, making sure that they can't fuel this illicit trade. That is absurd from that senator. That is not what we're seeing. This is an all-of-government approach.
Yeah, see, the thing is, though, we're not talking about whether you're controlling the border or not. I'm a fan of that. I thought that was an egregious failure by the previous administration to effectively let the border be open. It did very little to stop illegal border crossers. So I'm 100% in support of that. Think that we should have done it a lot longer ago, and that's useful. But when you're talking about the drug issue and a potential war against Venezuela, that's what we're talking about. Is Venezuela one of the kingpins of especially the fentanyl, which is the big issue that's affecting the United States, and so many people are being killed from that by drug overdoses, etc. Is Venezuela one of the primary countries? The answer is no. As I've said, depending on what ranking you want to look at, they're somewhere between 16 and 20th in the world. Ironically, China and India are at the very top of that. Mexico, Colombia, it's a lot of others on top of Venezuela. Then the question is, why are you sending the U.S. Gerald R. Ford down to the number 16th in line and not even worrying about all those that are higher if you're worried about fentanyl? That's the question. And why are we talking about the possibility of military conflict with Venezuela, which doesn't make any sense at all? And a matter of fact, when you look at a report here, and I want to pull this up real quick, facts about fentanyl smuggling, because he's talking about the border being secure and that somehow is going to stop it. But then you look at the fact that this report can confirm that roughly 4 in 5 people apprehended for smuggling fentanyl into the United States at the southern border between October 2018 and 2024 were U.S. citizens, not Venezuelans. The rest were largely individuals with visas, border crossing cards, or permission to enter the United States lawfully at a point of entry. And let's see if I can go down here. I think it shows this is where their drugs come in. And you see the ports of entry, legal ports of entry, are the primary place where it comes in. Checkpoints, vehicle stops, and then this very small little black area here are between ports of entry, i.e. where some of these alleged drug boats would come in outside the ports of entry. That's not so. So stopping these drug boats has almost no impact whatsoever on all these other categories here. And you're going after the one who's at the bottom of the list on top of you know, the drawer where the drugs are even coming from at the beginning. That's the big problem here. So when you're talking about where these drugs are coming from, you see that there's a big problem with where we're going to. And then the question is then, why are you using all this military power around Venezuela? Now, my hope is that we say, okay, this is a dumb idea. It's not going to help us. It's not going to work. And yeah, we've sent a lot of folks down there. Let's talk to Maduro. If you're looking for something, what to talk to him about, how's about, what can we do to make sure that there's no attack here? Now, honestly, there really isn't. We don't even have to talk to Maduro. There's no reason at all for the United States to attack Venezuela, period. Our national security is not affected. The drugs hardly have any association at all with Venezuela. There's a lot of others that we could be putting forward. Making border control points stronger, making the points of entry, having better security to be able to check for any kind of illegals coming in or any unauthorized drugs, pardon me. Those are the things. So where the drugs are coming in and we know about them, let's increase this surveillance there to make sure that we can interdict it. That's what's going to make the difference. And of course, if you're actually worried about the drug issue, then we also have to simultaneously get at the demand side of this inside the United States. You can't just say, well, we're going to do everything to just interdict and do nothing to people who were using all these illegal drugs and have the desire to have them and this fentanyl, et cetera. If you're not doing anything to get at the demand side, then you're not serious about an anti-drug situation. That's hard work. And we've tried all this before and had mixed or sometimes no success. But if you're not going to even try, then that just exposes that you're really not serious about this. And then opens the question, what is the objective here? I don't know. But what we do need to know is that there doesn't need to be any military confrontation. So hopefully the administration will figure this out. We'll shut all this stuff down, bring the ships home. And if you want to put a fig leaf on it and say, well, we talked to Maduro and we figured XYZ out, if you want to get something out of it, I guess you can do that. But as long as there's no military conflict, which would be terrible for the United States, it would be terrible for the people of Venezuela, doesn't need to happen. And it will not help the drug problem, but probably will exacerbate the immigration issue, as there's almost always spillover from these kind of things. That's where we are. That's where we hope to be. We will come and see you at the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. We may have another show for you later this afternoon, somewhere between 2:30 and 3 p.m. On where things are in the U.S. politics, especially in regard to the where we are now after the shutdown, and are we heading into another shutdown? What's going on with the ever popular or ever unpopular issue with the I just went blank. I can't believe I did that on the Epstein files. Sorry, how did I miss that one? That's like it all roiling a lot of things, and all this stuff is kind of intermixed here. We may, if we can bring some stuff together, we're going to have that for you this afternoon. But in any case, do remember that we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict. I know a lot of people really dig the podcast style of this, and we encourage you to go there if that's what you like, or share it with somebody else. because as we say a lot, we're unintimidated and uncompromised to bring you the truth, whatever it is. And you know, folks, you're watching our show. You don't get what we give you on very many other channels, because we're giving you the no kidding truth, because we care about the American people. We care about all the people. We're going to give it to you. Make sure you share it with somebody else who may need to have it. Thanks very much, folks. And we'll see you this afternoon with the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.